Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the February 23 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. He's out of Morton, Illinois. Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities in Hudsonville, Illinois. Vince Reinecke of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. And our special guest today, Dr. Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor. He's out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. You still have time to pick up your tickets for the All-Day Agricultural Outlook. It's at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on the 7th day of March. That's a Tuesday. We kick off at 8 a.m. in the Central Time Zone, 9 a.m. in the Eastern Time Zone. We'll run through about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, depending on which side of the state line you're from. And we'll have more than a dozen of our regular on-air analysts there, along with Eric Snodgrass, to take a look at the weather. He's with Agrible. We'll also take up the Farm Bill. We'll have the Gardner Policy Program Specialist, including Gary Schnitke, Jonathan Kappas, and Nick Paulson from the University of Illinois. Tickets just $30, including your meal. Again, willag.org, or dial this number, 800-898-1065, to purchase them today.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Now let's get started with our program. Dr. Michael Cordonnier is here. He's with Soybean and Corn Advisor. A couple of weeks ago, I understand, Mr. Cordonnier, that you were in South America. Can you tell me about your travels there and what you saw?
We spent a couple of weeks in mid-January in Mato Grosso in central Brazil looking at the soybean crops. Unfortunately, it rained every day we were there except for one. And, of course, that's been the news out of central Brazil lately. The soybean crop in Mato Grosso is over 50% harvested. But a lot of that was done the first 2 weeks of January. It has since slowed down. They harvested like 6% of the crop last week. So they're doing okay. There are some reports of excessive moisture causing poor quality seed, maybe in a few areas where the soybeans are sprouting. But in general, the yields are doing quite well. And if you go outside of Mato Grosso, it's probably doing even a little better in places like Goiás and maybe Mato Grosso do Sul. So I would say right now, the Brazil soybean crop is probably maybe in the mid-30 range, upper 30% range, kind of about a little bit ahead of average probably for Brazil. Now, yields are generally pretty good. My current soybean estimate for Brazil right now is 105 million tons, and I have a neutral to slightly higher bias going forward. So it's been doing okay, although it has slowed down last couple of weeks due to wet weather.
Are you willing to back that off if the wet weather continues, and it looks like it will?
Well, not really. I'm pretty much conservative here. There's some estimates higher than me, up a couple million tons. So I would say, unless it gets excessively wet, that continued rain would probably slow down the harvest some more and maybe keep me from increasing my estimates in Brazil.
Your expectations for Argentina?
Argentina has been sort of a hard one to call this year. Of course, they had a lot of flooding back around Christmas and New Year's Day. Since then, the weather's been pretty darn good. And in fact, estimates keep going up in Argentina. Right now, I have the Argentine soybean crop at 54 million tons. Most people are 54, 55 million tons, a little bit less than last year. Now, we did lose soybean acres due to the flooding, but even that is contentious. We can't agree on how many acres were lost. Give you an example, the Buenos Aires Grain Exchange and the Hosaida Grain Exchange, their difference in soybean acreage is off by a million hectares. That's like 2.5 million acres. So if we were, that's like 13%. If we'd be off by 13% of the United States, it'd be like over 10 million acres between estimates. So there's no consensus as how many acres were lost. But the consensus is that outside the flooded areas, the yields are pretty darn good. They'd probably be better than the last couple of years.
So the total number of bushels that you think will come out of South America, or total tonnage, is one country offsetting the other, so Argentina being offset by Brazil?
Correct. And if you look at all of South America, I have it about 174 million tons of soybeans. The last year was 165.5. So we're up about 8 or 9 million tons from last year. And you're right in your assessment that improvements in Brazil are offsetting most of the losses in Argentina.
Chip Nellinger, let's turn our attention from South America to North America. The United States Department of Agriculture this morning released in its agricultural outlook forums, and this is recorded on a Thursday, some figures. It put the U.S. Plantings of soybeans at 88 million acres today. I think that was up 5.5%. Some have suggested it could be higher than that. Where do you stand?
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be higher. However, you know, with the rally that corn has had over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and now beans setting back, I think there's still room to switch some acres. But really, you know, I talked to a lot of producers here this winter and done some meetings. The swings don't come from the I states in the heart of the Corn Belt. The swings come, you know, from the south. And from talking to people down there, there's a lot of people going to, you know, more cotton, more beans down there. And the swings can also come from the far north, like the Dakotas. And I think that's still a wild card. I'm not sure about there. But the swings come from, you know, not the corn bean fight, but the corn, cotton, rice, you know, peanut fight in the south, and all the different varied crops and vegetables they can grow in the north. So I still do think we're going to plant quite a few more bean acres. Is it bumping up against 5 million? That might be a bit excessive, but I think it could be 3.5 to 4 million pretty easily, and probably a couple million less corn acres very easily.
And so USDA, Chip, did put cotton acres up, what, I think 14.4% or something like that. It was a big jump. Do you think those would be in the Delta, or are they in your configuration, I suppose, for where that acreage comes from? Because it looks like they've already bumped that number up pretty substantially.
Yeah, and I think that comes from even shows you how much I know about cotton. Even parts of Kansas, you know, they plant a lot less wheat acres out there. Corn doesn't really pencil very well for them, and I think even Kansas is going to have a big bump higher in planted acreage on cotton. So there could be some shifts, and prices the next 6 or 8 weeks could still really swing things back and forth, you know, between corn and beans as well. So I think it's a little bit up in the air, but I think you have to assume, given how long we were above $10 new crop beans, that there's going to be a fairly sizable, you know, amount of bean acres this year.
Vince Reinicke, I know you probably took a pretty close look at these numbers from the USDA this morning, acreage as well as price. What'd you think of them?
I attempted to, Todd. Sometimes this time of year we get a little bit of distraction with all of our crop insurance work, but nonetheless, and you'd have to help me with the exact number, but I think it was something like 3.6 million acres that we were talking about being less than last year of the major eight crops. Does that sound about appropriate there, Todd?
I think that's right on the money. Down 1.4% from 253.5 to 249.8. So.
Yep. And I think that's the notable thing that I took away from this was not a significant change, but economics. You know, the forum definitely this morning presented once again that economics don't look that great at the farm gate. You would expect then that translates into an acreage drop. A general acreage drop or total acreage drop. Sounds like that's what we're seeing. That's something that I think is relatively easy to support or agree with, in that, you know, you got to think that producers are trying to do something different, just a matter of exactly how they make those switches. And I guess I'll otherwise throw out that, you know, when we looked at all the forecasts we've been trying to, you know, use this winter in rounds of meetings or in the last couple months here, you know, we've been forecasting. It's been tough, or it's going to be tough to really add much to the corn carryout. Likewise, it seems like it's going to be tough to not add to the soybean carryout. Today's numbers, you know, as most understand, most of that formulated back late last winter, but still those numbers that we indicated that the USDA gave us today, you know, the numbers we'll talk about and use and analysts will cut and slice and dice in the next month before we get the acreage estimates, the initial acreage estimates, they fall right in line with all of the things we've been mentioning to our customers in the last, and anybody that's been to our seminars in the last couple months, that is that, you know, we anticipate it's still going to be kind of tough to add the corn carry out with that number of acres. Likewise, it's going to be tough not to add the soybean carry out with the acres that we're talking about here.
Sherman Newland, you are there in the southern part of Illinois. I've got two questions for you. One, is it dry? We saw that from NOAA today, and I suspect you'll tell us probably that it is. The corn number from USDA at 90 million today. Again, the bean number at 88 million. The corn number is down 4.3% from last year. Bean number's up 5.5%. Your thoughts on what'll happen in your part of the world, and where those changes really do take place, and are conditions fairly dry where you are?
Yeah, right now conditions are pretty dry right now. Guys are, you know, scratching around a little bit, but it's pretty uncommon for this time of year. A lot of the phone calls we've been taking, you know, a lot of guys are saying, well, it reminds me of 2012 quite a bit, and you can't argue with that. So it is awfully dry. Nobody's really putting on a lot of gas or anything yet, ammonia-wise or fertilizer. From that aspect, but it is really dry. From the numbers side of it, can't argue with what they put out tonight today. I mean, they were, you know, from the economists, and so you kind of got to take that with a grain of salt, but I do believe, you know, they're probably pretty close from what we've been hearing in our area. I mean, most of the guys are going to stay, you know, on their crop rotation. You're going to find some that will switch, you know, maybe a little bit more to the bean side because of the, you know, the higher price and the crop insurance prices and whatnot. But we kind of wonder, though, if it's going to come down to weather as much as anything. You know, if we can get an early start, you know, will these guys really switch as much, you know, corn acres to beans, or will we, you know, get an early jump and get into the corn and start planting that? So I think weather is going to be a big determining factor come this spring, whether, you know, whether it's dry here or wet up in the north in the Red River Valley in the Dakota areas. We've been hearing, you know, how wet and cold it is up in those areas. So, you know, it'll be, you know, up to the weather, whether we end up, maybe we'll have more prevent plant acres this year. Who knows from that standpoint.
Dr. Cordonnier, USDA made note that their soybean acreage figure was predicated on the corn-soybean ratio during the month of February, and also that it's the highest now that it's been since 1997. Is this a good enough reason, you think, for producers to change from one crop mix to the next?
Well, I agree with everything everybody has said so far. And I thought it came in pretty much as expected. That ratio is very good for soybeans. So the soybean area is going to go up like 4.6 million acres, corn area down about 4. But the last comment about weather I think is very important. If we do get a quick early start in some of these southern locations, it might plant a little bit more corn than what was anticipated. And likewise up in the northern locations, the Dakotas, you could get, you know, some wet weather up there, could delay up there. So I think it's still sort of yet to be determined, but I didn't think there was much of a surprise in the report this morning. And I thought that one comment about it's going to be hard to increase the corn carryover, I think that's a very good point. And it's going to be hard not to increase the soybean carryover. That was a good point as well. So we're going to be, there's going to be a lot of soybeans. And I want to throw in one extra thing here. When I was in Brazil last couple of weeks, and since then, there's been a lot of talk in Brazil and Argentina about U.S. Pulling out of TPP and maybe trying to renegotiate NAFTA. Both Brazil and Argentina feel this is going to open the door for increased exports of these products to Mexico, to Canada, to the Asian countries. You know, we all compete in the same countries with the same products. And in fact, just a few days ago, the president of Brazil said in the next 5 years, he expects that Brazil's share of the world agricultural exports, which currently stands at 7%, he feels it'll go up to 10% within 5 years. So if the current administration insists on doing these things with trade agreements, Brazil and Argentina are sitting right there with record production, and they're waiting to take away some market share from the United States.
USDA, in fact, did mention that today, expected corn to be continue to be the primary driver for the United States, at least on the global stage. It would be the primary driver. The United States would be, however, that Brazil would be the primary driver for soybeans, with them by 20, I can't remember whether it was 25 or 26, they would be moving to more than 50% of the global trade. For corn, the United States, their expectation was 38 to 39% by the time we got to the end of the 10-year trade. So I suppose we are looking forward, Dr. Cordonnier, to kind of a changing landscape, but a southern and a northern hemisphere, corn in the northern hemisphere and soybeans out of the southern hemisphere, that the United States has been really the dog in that particular area for quite some time. China, still the big importer, and the expectation, I think, there, too, is for them to continue to take soybeans. Have you looked very much at expectations for the growth of imports of soybeans into China over the next several years?
Well, I agree with the USDA. I think they're going to continue increasing their imports. I don't see that backing off at all. You know, we had a little bit of a disruption with their corn. They trying to cut back on corn a little bit because they get too much corn supplies in China, but you never quite know what the actual situation is in China, especially for storage. But I think everyone is in agreement. China will continue importing more soybeans. And if we go back just a little bit to this corn and soybeans, you know, South America produces about 1.5 times more soybeans than North America, but North America produces about 3 times more corn. So United States makes the corn market, but South America makes the soybean market, and it's just going to get more and more like that. And one of the big changes in the recent decade or so in South America has been increasing corn production, especially the second crop of corn out of Brazil. Now, that keeps getting bigger and bigger. Brazil will continue to increase the soybean acreage. They got plenty of area to do it. So Brazil and Argentina are going to come on stronger here in the future, I think.
Sherman Newland, what are your thoughts about marketing old crop corn, given all the numbers we've heard from USDA today and expectations for bigger acreage in the United States for soybeans?
I think there's, you know, some upside here yet, maybe coming back into the market once we get past the end of the month. I mean, you know, push back up to that upper 370, 380 range. I think guys are probably hanging on more or less. You know, they sold a lot of their beans early, so they're hanging on to the corn from that aspect, as you know, for the money flow. But I think they're hoping to maybe get into that 380, 390 again on the board. Basis has been really pretty good for this time of year for around here, so you're not giving up too much on basis. But I think you know, they're going to hang on to it for just a little bit longer if they can. Funds are long this corn market. You know, I don't think the funds are ready to get back out anytime soon yet until we see what the weather's going to be, and especially if acres are going to be reduced on the corn. So I think they're hoping for higher prices. I think you need to make some sales up here, though. You know, if we can get it back up close to those highs, I think guys will probably say, okay, we're going to get some moved, you know, before we get into the field and get it sold and get it priced. And then if they want to, you know, re-own something on paper or do something with some options, that's always a viable thing to look at.
Chip, how important do you think it is that the funds are long both corn and soybeans at this point? And will it make much difference over the longer run of the season?
Yeah, I think it can make a huge difference. You know, they've been short corn for a long, long time. As Sherm said, you know, now they're long. And I don't think, I think that's probably for the long haul. So it probably means we have limited downside in corn. But as to kind of some of the talk before, if you look at their position, their long position in beans, meal and oil combined, it's nearly a record, even as big or slightly bigger than it was in 2012. They've been long beans for the better part of 5 years now. And with all these issues, a bigger crop out of Brazil, more acres here, you know, the talk was going to be hard to shrink bean carry out. I think that's important because for 2 years running, compared to the January, you know, USDA report, we were over 200 million bushels lower when it came to the final stocks number on beans than the January crop report. And I think the market's kind of thinking that could happen again, but the demand projections are so high and we're just meeting them, even though they're records, huge demand, but we're just kind of meeting them and not exceeding them. So point being, if you tap all that together with the funds having a large long position of in beans and the bean complex, they could easily, very easily decide, hey, we've made good money being long beans for several years. Let's take some money off the table. If they just got out of their long position, let alone getting short, that's a lot of selling pressure to hit the market. At the same time, the Brazilian farmer has a lot of beans left to sell, in my opinion, and it could really be a significant impact in the bean market. So, yeah, I think it's significant for both. I think corn, they're in it for the long haul here, at least till you get, you know, deeper and closer to pollination in the growing season. But the bean market, I'm really fearful that they might be towards the end of the road on wanting to be long the bean market, and that's an awful lot of selling pressure if that's the case.
I suppose, Vince Reinicke, what he's trying to tell us is by the time we get to March 31st and the numbers that come out from farmers, it's as related to acreage, that there could be a big drop in the soybean market, whether that comes before or after that date, depending on what the funds think might happen there, and that they might look at it and say, hey, USDA has the demand built in, and we think their number's right for the end of the year. Is that where we stand?
You know, all of the points that have been made here are good points, and obviously it's hard to foretell what exactly the market might bring at us, specifically in the face of the bean market still having a 10 in front of it. You know, when you look at sheer fundamental, typical fundamental numbers, you got to say, what the heck, kind of. And I think many of us have seen and probably said similar things. And so to that end, you know, you hit on Chinese demand, bean demand. That in itself has been extremely strong. And I think that's important to note. USDA again forecasted it was going to be, in fact, I think one of the slides that I saw said something about, you know, it cited the growth of the Chinese middle class. I think one more thing you got to realize is there's just a lot of demand, almost inelastic demand for soybeans in the world. And I think that's some of what was playing into this. However, Chip noted well that there's downside price risk. You add a bunch to the soybean carryout, which can happen, good yield and big acres in the U.S. And the other thing I want to throw out is that we have crop insurance prices are effectively set now. And that, as we know, goes a long way to helping a producer end up with a decent revenue at the end of the year to pay his or her bills with. So where I'm coming to is we got to remember that that's one of the sources that we use for risk management. And if we end up with a big price drop, that's one way that producers can definitely do a good job or a better job than they have maybe in the past of protecting themselves. A different nuance this year than where we were at last year when the price was, you know, considerably lower, $1.20 lower or something like that, $1.30. Again, I come back to the reality that we could see this bean market do any number of things depending on, you know, what this crop looks like or how demand continues to either, you know, increase as we go forward or level off. And I think you got to do the fundamental things right, which, you know, if you look at what you expect to take in revenue this year on soybeans, it makes them a very viable option as opposed to planting corn. And you got crop insurance that's doing everything it can to back you up there. You've had the opportunity. You still got a good opportunity to sell new crop soybeans at good numbers. All of those things really, you know, you got to strike while the iron's hot if you're a producer.
Vince, do you know what the running tally at the moment is for crop insurance? We have 3 days left. Last year was $3.86 per corn, $8.85 per soybeans.
Yeah, and so, and don't quote me exactly to the penny because obviously I haven't seen it in the last couple of days, but we were at $3.97 for corn a few days ago. a couple days ago, and then 10.22, I believe it was, on beans. So better numbers on corn, slightly better, and then significantly better numbers on beans. I did the math real quick while we were talking earlier, and that ends up being just under a 2.6-to-1 ratio. So it's 2.57-to-1, I think it was, or 5.8-to-1 ratio, corn to beans there in that price that gets locked in via crop insurance.
Sherm, what does this tell you about the marketing plan for you and the producers you talk to going forward?
I don't disagree with anything these guys are saying. I mean, I think you got to be a little bit careful here with the beans. Our basis is, nothing great, but it's still, still pretty good cash bean price for next fall or even next January. So I think you got to get something done. We like being at least 30 to 40% hedged one way or the other going into springtime, not knowing for sure how the weather's going to be, and you can use that with either combination of cash and or some put options in the bean market. So I think you got to, like you said, you got to play it. You got better prices than what we did last year. You're profitable levels. You got to pull the trigger and get something done. Kind of the same way in corn. You got to get something done here in this corn market just a little bit, and then just kind of see how the spring weather and the acres actually do play out. But you're going to need to be flexible this year, the way it's looking, because it's hard to say. It's hard to say what this weather. I mean, I'm going to go back to the weather again. I think weather's going to be a big, your dominating factor in all this. Whether we have a hot, dry spring or a summer, no one knows yet. But if you get a lot of stuff sold, I think, you have to be careful. Maybe have some call options above the market just in case.
Hey, Dr. Cordonnier, what do you have for your carryout number for this marketing year for soybeans?
I pretty much agree with what the USDA says. I think it's going to be like 420 for soybeans. I don't disagree with anything everybody said so far. But let me add, I'm just writing an article right now about crop insurance in Brazil, and I find it very interesting. Insurance is so important for U.S. farmers, but not so much in Brazil. In fact, for all of the crops in Brazil, only 9.6% of the crops are covered by crop insurance. And if you go to the big state of Mato Grosso, it's only 4.5%. So much, much, much lower. And to give you some idea about the premiums and things in Brazil, the Brazilian farmers pay 59% of the premiums for crop insurance last year, and the government picked up 41%. So, the farmers in Brazil just don't think it's worth doing crop insurance because they have a tropical climate. They usually don't have the weather concerns that we have here in the United States. So it's much less of a concern for Brazilian farmers. They're much more interested in the currency exchange rate, which is really important for them, whereas American farmers just pay no attention to that at all. So some different factors for both North and the Southern Hemispheres.
Is their crop insurance a revenue insurance program, or is it like a crop hail?
It's like hail insurance, so it's not revenue.
So, Dr. Cordier, the question I guess I would pose there is that last year that's why we saw some pretty adverse financial outcomes for some producers in South America then, right, with the really rough drought, bad crop, that really put the hurts on some of the economic or the financial situations for some producers down there.
Absolutely. Last year, a lot of guys got burnt very badly. I give you some comparisons here. In Mato Grosso, before they did their corn, they had it like 75% forward sold. And as we all know, they had a very bad growing season, hot and dry. A lot of guys could not fulfill their contracts, couldn't pay their loans. So by not having insurance, they really got burnt badly. But if you talk to the guys, they say, well, that was the worst year I've ever experienced in my entire life. So, and it was very unusual. I've been involved in Mato Grosso for over 40 years, and last year was the worst year I can ever remember. So everybody thought that was an outlier. Now this year, they're getting too much rain. And people saying, gee, this is the most flooding I've had in my lifetime. So they think this year might be an outlier as well. But the bottom line is that they just don't feel crop insurance is a big part of their production plans, and probably was the wrong attitude for last year and this year, especially in Mato Grosso.
So to piggyback on that, then we all know that our balance sheets can only absorb so much risk or so much loss before that has to change, before the picture, the production, however you want to described that has to change. How long do you think these guys continue to forge ahead in light of massive losses?
Okay, what they do in Brazil is, and it's already been done, that the guys that lost money last year because of low production, the government has a program that they could renegotiate their loans from the government for a five-year period. So they roll it back into a five-year program, reduce the interest rates a little bit, and just cut them a break. And they get 5 years to pay it back off. So that is that's a nice little program in Brazil. Now, I just saw the Minister of Agriculture in Brazil saying that the next farm program in Brazil, and they only do a farm program 1 year at a time, and their next farm program is going to have lower interest rates than last year, more money available. So the Minister of Agriculture is trying to help out, you know, the farmers. And agriculture is the shining star of the Brazilian economy. I mean, all the other sectors are in bad shape. Agriculture is in not necessarily good shape, but the area keeps going up, the production keeps going up, exports keep going up. Now, prices aren't all that great, but compared to the other sectors of the Brazilian economy, agriculture is a shining star. And they want to make sure that goes as well as possible going forwards.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. I think I'll start, Vince Reinicke, with you from Strategic Farm Marketing. A final word for the day.
As Todd, thanks again for having me here and having us as regular contributors. But as I was talking with Bill early this morning, he and I, just a few things that we wanted to make sure we passed along. It came back to weather. Sherm had mentioned weather. Weather does make a difference, and I kind of left our conversation, Bill and I's conversation this morning, by saying, I hope the weather doesn't cause some producers to make a bad choice on what they're planting this year. And if I could leave you, the producers that are listening, with one thing, I think they need to go back and make sure they recheck those economics and just exactly what kind of chances they end up with making, you know, and end up profitability-wise in corn versus soybeans. And some of them are making those choices today as they put anhydrous on or whatever. But you know, I talked with a producer this morning and I said, hey, you sure you don't want a few extra acres of beans? Because it looks like we ran some numbers. And he said, gosh, I probably should consider that. So with that said, I think a guy's got to just make sure you keep your hands back if you're going to get thrown a curveball this year.
Sherm Newland from Risk Management Commodities.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with those. I think you got to be flexible, like I said earlier. I mean, you know, take advantage of some of these good prices when they're offered, you know, but don't, you know, ignore the markets here. I mean, we're going to be offered some opportunities better than we've had in the past, you know, and it's going to be a critical year to make some, hopefully, some profitable decisions. And, you know, the real weather story, more than likely, is not going to affect the markets big time until you get, you know, into that late spring, early summer time frame. So there's plenty of time for that. So just remain flexible and make some hedges.
Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Yeah, I just say on this bean market, don't get lulled to sleep. It seems like for 3 or 4 years running, every time beans drop below 10, you just waited, take a deep breath, and pretty quickly they're back over 10. And it just seems like, all right, they're never going to go back under 10. But we've kind of outlined several bearish influences here. Bigger South American crop, more acres here, bigger carryout here. It could be different this time. So don't let $10 plus slip by here. In the same breath, you know, on corn, you know, there's good demand on corn too. So, you know, it would not take much of a drop in acres and much of a sub-trend line yield to cut that carryout back towards a billion bushels. Option volatility is very cheap in corn right now, not so much in beans. Consider some courage calls out there. Out of the money, December calls are pretty cheap. That way you don't get handcuffed in this volatility. If we see it this coming summer, like we did last June, you can sell crop into it, still have some upside potential. So I think there's lots of opportunities coming, but we got to sharpen our pencils right now, I think, especially on beans.
And Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor.
Well, I do have to agree with a lot everything everybody said so far, especially for the bean market. Of course, we had a record big bean crop in the United States last year. South America got a record crop this year. You know, what's the chances of having another big record yield in the United States? So the bean carryout can be dropped down here a little bit with some adverse weather. And, of course, I do agree with the corn. If we cut back to corn 4 million acres and then you have some adverse weather, this burdensome corn carryout could be gone pretty quickly. So even though I don't give advice to farmers on pricing and that sort of thing, take advantage of some good prices, especially on the soybeans, because there's probably more of a downside risk on the soybean price than upside potential.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. There you can buy your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook or by calling 800-898-1065 during regular business hours. Our panelists this week for the program have included Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois, Vince Reinecke from Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign, Illinois, and Michael Cordonier of Soybean and Corn Advisor. He's out of Hinsdale, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.